I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we continue our election coverage with a debate on Proposition 39. According to the legislative analyst, multi-state businesses represent the third largest source of revenue for California's general fund, $9.6 billion last year. Now, these are companies that operate out of the state and do business in the state. On November 6th, California voters will decide whether they want to change the way these corporations are taxed. Under current law, multi-state businesses can choose between two options, one based on their sales in California, or one based on payroll, property, and sales. Out-of-state companies can choose the latter, greatly reducing their tax bill if they have little or no assets in the state. Prop 39 would require these companies to pay taxes based solely on their amount of sales in the state. If Prop 39 passes, the legislative analyst says the state will collect about $1 billion in revenues each year. Half of the revenues raised would go toward alternative energy projects, and the other half would go to the state general fund budget. On today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series with a debate on Prop 39. How do you think multi-state corporations should be taxed? The yes on 39 side says the current tax code includes a loophole that allows corporations to, quote, move facilities and jobs out of the state and get a tax break. The Prop 39 campaign has targeted Chrysler, General Motors, International Paper, and Kimberly-Clark for opposing Assembly Bill 1500, which would require companies to base tax calculations solely on their sales in California. Tom Steyer, founder of Farallon Capital Management, is funding the Prop 39 campaign and has contributed at least $22 million. Other financial contributors include Californians for Clean Energy, the National Resources Defense Council, and the League of Conservation Voters. Joe Caves is a spokesman for the Yes on 39 campaign. He's an attorney and registered lobbyist in California, specializing in environmental and natural resources law and policy. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose.
It's nice to have you.
And
then the no on 39 says, side says this is a massive tax hike and the passage of Prop 39 will make the business climate worse in California and cost jobs. No contributions to committees opposing Prop 39 have been reported. And we will be joined in about 5 minutes by Lou Oler. He's founder and president of the National Tax Limitation Campaign and one of the main opponents of Prop 39. So while we wait for Lou to join us, Joe, why don't we jump in here? And first off, and I want to go over this with a lot of specifics. It's not really getting that much attention, Prop 39. I think it was the San Diego Free Press called it one of the more boring propositions on the ballot, but it's really important. So first off, how do you define a multi-state company? Can you give us a couple examples?
Sure. A multi-state company is a company that does business both in California and outside of California. And the formula we're dealing with here is apportionment of taxes for state tax purposes. So if you're a company and you do business in more than one state or in one state and other countries, any business outside of the state, the question is how much of your corporate income is subject to California corporate income tax. And the same is true in other states. So all states have formulas to apportion that income to determine how much of the income that you make in a given state is taxable in that state. It's not a simple subject, very complicated, and the gradual trend has been for states to move towards what's the mandatory single sales factor. That is to do what you just described and what Prop 39 does, which is to say to base the amount of income taxable in California on the percentage of the sales that are in California.
Now, are we talking specifically about companies that are not located in California?
No, they could be located in California. They could have some presence in California. The question is, are they doing business in more than one state? If you're only doing business in California, then all your income is taxable in California. If you're doing a business in California and outside, then only a portion of income is taxable in California.
So give us some names that we would recognize. What multi-state businesses are we talking about?
Well, you're talking about almost any large business, all the companies, all the major consumer products companies. Those are all multi-state companies.
And Joe, are you on a cell phone by chance?
I'm not.
Okay. We're getting some weird sounds on your phone. We'll try to fix that.
I can try. I'm on a headset.
Oh, maybe that was it.
Okay,
so you're talking any major corporation. And why is Prop 39 specifically targeting Chrysler, GM, International Paper, and Kimberly-Clark?
Those are companies that had spent money opposing this, and it might be useful to get a little bit of history on this tax provision. In 2009, as part of the budget deal in California, California was about to adopt what most of the major industrial states have adopted, which is mandatory single sales factor calculation. That is, your in California is based on the percentage of your sales that are in California. At the last minute, without any hearings, without any review, without any notice to anybody, on the last night, a little provision was put into that that created an election. That is, a company gets to choose which formula is used to calculate their taxes so that they can choose the one that provides the lowest taxes. Now, that loophole allows companies who sell into California but keep most of their jobs out of the state to pay significantly lower taxes.
All right, you know,
so
Joe,
the point here has been to try to close that, and the legislature has been trying to close that, and every year since 2009, the legislature has tried, come very close, but failed by a couple of votes. The companies that were targeted were the companies that had put money up and that had openly fought closing that loophole in the legislature.
And that is Joe Caves. He's spokesman with the Yes on Prop 39 side. And now I would like to welcome Lou Euler to the show. Lou is founder and president of the National Tax Limitation Committee and one of the main opponents of Prop 39. Hi, Lou. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's nice to join you. You bet.
Well, it's nice to join you. So we basically just spent a couple minutes defining multi-state and talking about the history of Prop 39. And I wanted to ask you before we dive into the nuts and bolts here, according to many websites, the sites that track financial contributions, no contributions to committees opposing Prop 39 have yet been reported. Is that right?
I think that's the case. There were several companies, the multi-state companies, that got together early and decided to oppose this. But apparently there have been must have called some of the CEOs and told them it would be a bad business for them to be vocal on this, and that they might not like the results of some of the advertising. That's as I understand it. So there really is no campaign against Prop 39 at this point.
And is it safe to assume that the majority of the corporations, well, specifically Prop 39 is targeting Chrysler, GM, International Paper, and Kimberly-Clark, is it safe to assume that these multi-state corporations oppose Prop 39?
Of course.
Okay. So let's dive in and talk about what this would actually do. Joe, why don't you talk about what Prop 39 would actually do? How would it tax these multi-state corporations?
It changes the calculation. And right now they have an election. They get to choose whether or not to use the single sales factor or a multi-factor formula. And the way the multi-factor formula works is it takes payroll, property, and sales. It double weights sales, and the percentage of your payroll, the percentage of your property, and the percentage of your sales in a given state averaged together determine the percentage of your income taxable in that state. Mandatory single sales factor says it's sales that's the best indicator of your income in a state. That's been the trend of major states everywhere to try to get a fair formula and one that doesn't discriminate against putting jobs in California, because that's one of the most pernicious effects of the current tax system is it actually rewards companies for keeping jobs out of California. That's the reason the major states have shifted to the mandatory single sales factor. That's the reason that even a number of opponents of Proposition 39 have fought in their home states where they have jobs. They've argued for mandatory single sales factor there, arguing it's better for home state and it's better for the businesses that locate jobs in their state.
And Joe, we're going to have to call you right back because we're still getting a click on your line. So we'll call you right back. And again, that is Joe Caves. He's yes on 39. Lou Euler is no on 39. So Lou, the argument is that multi-state businesses tend to choose to pay based on payroll, property, and sales, greatly reducing their tax bill if they have little or no assets in the state. So can you talk about why you think multi-states should still have these two options and not just one based on sales.
Yeah, the formula is one thing. The bottom line of Prop 39 is it's a $1 billion tax increase, and it shifts $1 billion from the private sector to the public sector, which we know from experience over the years is much less efficient than the private sector. It takes, when you take money out of the companies that otherwise would receive these funds, you are killing jobs, you are harming return on investment for the shareholders of those companies, et cetera. And what I really object to is that this initiative is a clear example of the wrong things to do with initiatives. This is ballot box budgeting, because the architect or author of this, the Mr. Steyer, the billionaire who put this on the ballot, then is going to command half of that money, $500 million a year for 5 years, to direct it to his pet projects of greening California further and doing things that are specifically itemized in the measure and under the supervision of a citizens commission that will be nothing but political appointees. So we'll get some more stem cell type results where public monies are used and are used privately for the interests of the architects of the initiative. And that's what I really resent, is an abuse of the initiative process.
So can you elaborate on that? What part of it do you oppose?
I oppose increasing taxes to start with. Second, we take total issue with the allocation of the dollars as set forth in the initiative. I mean, if you're going to increase taxes, at least put those funds in the general fund and allow the people we elect to the legislature, whether we think they're smart or dumb, nevertheless, we elect them to allocate the resources of the state in the direction of the greatest need, whether that be education, roads, or whatever it may be. But here, the architect of Prop 39 has said, no, we're not leaving it to the legislature. I'm going to tell you how you're going to spend that money, and a half of that money, $500 million a year for 5 years, will be directed to these various green projects that he's outlined.
Well, and let's talk about that. So you're referring to Tom Steyer, founder of Farallon Capital Management, and he has contributed at least $22 million to Proposition 39. Joe, can you tell us why Tom Steyer has poured so much money into this proposition?
Well, Tom is a philanthropist. He's been a major supporter of both environmental causes and good government reform causes in California. He helped with the No on 23 campaign, which was 23 was an attempt to roll back California's environmental laws. He's been a major supporter of these kind of measures, and I think he identified two issues that needed to be addressed in California. One was closing this tax loophole and stopping out-of-state corporations from taking advantage of California's market, the ability to sell into it and gain profit from it while avoiding the same kind of taxes that California companies pay. And two, that California is suffering from a severe recession that's largely driven by unemployment. And so that $500 million a year for 5 years in this initiative is dedicated to job creation. Job creation in a way that we know is cost effective, and that is doing energy efficiency projects, the things that will put construction workers back to work. That's the biggest area of unemployment in California right now, and it's one of the biggest drags on California's economy. The rest of the money does go to the general fund, half the money for 5 years, and after that, all of the money goes back into the general fund for use for schools and other priorities as the legislature determines.
So there's a couple of things that are raised here. What are your thoughts about the fact that one single individual could drive a proposition like that? I mean, this is nothing new to the state of California, but what are your thoughts specifically about that? Because Lou just said that's one of the, you know, one of the main things that he opposes on Prop 39.
Well, I don't think that's the main thing Lou opposes. I think the thing he opposes is that it raises taxes on businesses.
Well, a lot of Californians actually oppose this process where you have one person bankrolling an entire proposition.
Well, the issue here, I think, is really the merits of the proposition itself. The tax provisions in this initiative have been introduced in the legislature for the last 3 years. They've been passed by at least one house in the legislature for the last 3 years and nearly passed the other house. This is not some crazy idea that somebody came up with. This is something the legislature's been trying to do. It's closing a loophole. It's widely acknowledged and widely acknowledged by editorial boards around the state and groups around the state. This is a thing that we need to do as a matter of tax reform. The dedication of a portion of the money to...
Hold that thought. Let me just get Lou's response. Would you respond
again,
to that part?
You've got to separate the issues. And first, this is clearly a tax increase, all right? And so you're shifting money from the private sector, which much more efficiently uses resources than the public sector to begin with. And so irrespective of whether it's closing loopholes or all that, it's a tax increase, all right? Now, if people concurred that this is an okay adjustment of the tax laws, and as a result, there's more revenue flowing to the state. The second issue is, should this proponent direct those resources, or shouldn't they go into the general fund and allow those whom we elect to allocate these based upon the priorities that the legislature sees as distinguished from the priorities that Mr. Steyer believes in? And if he's so committed to these green projects, why didn't he spend his own money promoting those and doing those and leave us alone?
Well, so Joe, what about that? Again, half of the revenue, we're talking about $1 billion a year, would go toward energy projects and the other half would go to the state general fund budget. How are these decisions made behind the scenes?
The structure of the job creation portion, and I want to emphasize that that's the way the initiative is drafted, is it's job creation in energy efficiency and clean energy jobs, things we know how to do, things we know save money, to try to create the mechanisms to put people back to work in California. That's the goal of that additional $500 million. So half the money goes to the general fund. About 40% of that will be dedicated to schools under existing law. The other half of the money goes to these job creation projects.
And why not let the legislature make the decisions?
Well, and I will just tell you, as we looked at it, we were looking for a way to try to put money into job creation, and that was a priority, and all our polls that we've seen indicate that was a priority for the voters. And that's really why we have initiatives, is to allow voters to decide that. So they want to see this loophole, which does raise taxes, but it raises taxes on out-of-state companies. It does it in a way that is fair to California companies. It levels the playing field here in California, and it's going to put Californians back to work.
That's just baloney.
Lou, let me just give out the phone number briefly, because we're going to go to break in about 5 minutes, but I want to make sure we get our listeners in on this, because Prop 39 isn't getting that much publicity or that much attention, and I want to make sure we get listeners' questions. So we're talking about Prop 39. Joe Caves is with yes on Prop 39. Lou Yoler is with no on Prop 39. And here's what it would do. Under current law, multi-state businesses, we're talking about Apple, Intel, General Motors, Chrysler, you name the company and we're talking about it. They can choose between two options, one based on their sales in California or one based on payroll, property, and sales. And Prop 39 would not give them an option. It would require these businesses to pay taxes based solely on their sales in the state. And we'll talk about specifics after a break in about 5 minutes. But if you have any questions about Prop 39, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. How do you think multi-state businesses should be taxed in California? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. And Lou, before you respond to jobs, I just wanted to ask you, Joe, what does the legislative analyst say about jobs?
Well, the legislative analyst has identified in both cases that changing from the election to mandatory single sales factor does create more jobs in California. It eliminates the incentive to put jobs outside the state. It'll bring jobs back to California. Two, the other $500 million that's dedicated, there's no question, it's going into job creation in California.
All right. And so, Lou, what's your response to that?
Well, one of the issues that has yet to be covered is the nature of the allocation decisions. And I hark back to the stem cell research measure that has been discussed because of the abuse of these funds and the conflict of interest between those who make the decisions and those who serve on the board. And the so-called Citizen Oversight Board that is created under Prop 39 to look at these various projects has no conflict of interest protection. These are all political appointees of by the treasurer, the attorney general, and the controller. And furthermore, there's 4% of these total funds that are that can be used for administrative overhead by the recipient groups. That's $100 million that they can use over the 5 years. There are all kinds of real holes in this that allow for conflict of interest, and again, this is the kind of initiative abuse that we should avoid at all costs.
And Joe, what's your response about potential abuse?
That's a complete mischaracterization. This is not anything like the stem cell initiative. This is structured so that all of the decisions about where the money goes are done through the normal budget process. The legislature, which Mr. Euler just indicated ought to be the one that makes the decisions here about what programs money goes into. The oversight board is purely an audit function. Their job is to make sure the money is spent correctly.
Well, let's take one caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Andy in Redwood City. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Great show.
Thank you.
This is for Lou Euler. Hey, it's time that the corporations start to pay up and contribute to our society because they're not doing it right now. In the 1950s, the federal tax coffers, over 30% of the taxes collected came from corporations. Now it's less than 7%. And the average effective corporate tax rate is 12% on the S&P 500 when the statutory is 35. Many companies pay no taxes. It's time the corporations contribute to our society because they're not, and they have to start paying. And these loopholes have got to be closed. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Lou, your response? Just briefly, before we get a break.
We have to separate the issues. His point is well taken in terms of whether there should be heavier tax emphasis on corporate entities, on business entities, than on individuals. That's a debate that will be ongoing. But the question here is, do we, especially at this point in time in California's history, do we need more taxation on anybody, let alone $1 billion of additional taxation at this point in time? I don't think so.
And we are talking about Proposition 39, which would change the way multi-state businesses in California are taxed. You can join us, 866-798-8255. This is your call. We'll be back after this.
Back to your call with Rose Aguilar in just a moment. Every Tuesday, the Your Call team sends out their weekly email newsletter. Helps you keep up on what's coming up on the show, giving you resources to let you learn more and to get involved. Subscribe today so you'll know what's coming up. And you can submit your own questions and comments before the show goes to air. It's free and easy to sign up. Just click the email newsletter link at yourcallradio.org, yourcallradio.org. We invite you to join today's show by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or again, email to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. And on tomorrow's show, Holly Kernan will host a debate about Proposition 35. If Prop 35 passes, it would increase criminal penalties for human traffickers. Supporters say it would protect vulnerable populations from exploitation, while opponents say the language is too broad, the penalties are too severe, and the wrong people would suffer. So tomorrow, if you've got questions on Prop 35, you can join us and give us a call and tune in for that. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about Proposition 39. And if you have not yet registered to vote, you can do so for the very first time in California online at the Secretary of State's website. So spread the word about that. Prop 39 would change the way multi-state corporations are taxed. We're talking about Apple, Intel, General Motors, International Paper, Chrysler, big corporations that do business in California. And under current law, these businesses can choose between two tax options, one based on their sales in California or one based on payroll, property, and sales. Prop 39 would require them to pay taxes based solely on sales. Supporters say that Prop 39 would close a tax loophole and would raise about $1 billion a year. Half of the revenues raised would go toward alternative energy projects. The other half would go to the state general fund. Tom Steyer, founder of Farallon Capital Management, is funding Prop 39. He's contributed at least $22 million to this prop. Other financial contributors include Californians for Clean Energy, the National Resources Defense Council, and the League of Conservation Voters. You've also got the California Labor Federation announcing its official endorsement of Prop 39. On the other side, major corporations oppose Proposition 39. They say it's a massive tax hike and will cost jobs. And we're joined by Joseph Caves, yes on 39, and Lou Euler, no on 39. And if you have any questions or comments on Proposition 39, we'd love to hear from you. How do you think multi-state corporations should be taxed? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or post a comment on our website. So I want to make sure that people are really understanding this. Joe, can you give us an example of a company that tends to choose to pay based on payroll, property, and sales, and then how they would be affected by solely paying based on sales?
Sure. Let me give you a slightly different example that I think is more explanatory, because this is a really complicated area of tax law. If you take two companies, one based purely in California, all their sales are in California, all their payroll's in California. You take a second company, and that company, they have the same amount of sales in California as the first, but they put their manufacturing plant across the border in Nevada. Okay?
Okay.
Same sales in California, same size company, same profit margin. So their profit in California is really the same. The one that puts their manufacturing plant in Nevada will pay half the corporate income tax in California. That's the crazy thing about this law, is it creates a disincentive to locate jobs here. And that's the reason most of the other major industrial states, the big market states people want to sell into, including those with Republican governors, have changed to a mandatory single sales factor. The same thing Prop 39 does.
And to confuse it a little more, because we're talking about companies that are, you know, all over the world. So for Apple, for example, it's based in Silicon Valley. It's got but it has an office in Nevada. The New York Times reported on this a couple of months ago, which allows it to take to get major breaks because it's got like five people in Nevada. So how would a company like Apple be affected by this?
Apple is not affected, and I'll explain why. Companies whose payroll in California are, as a percentage, greater than their sales in California aren't affected. Mandatory single sales works for them. If you're a big employer in California, and I know Apple employs people all over the world, but relative to their sales in California, their payroll in California, their employees in California are high. So their percentage of their payroll in California is higher than the percentage of their sales in California. So that means mandatory single sales factor doesn't increase their taxes.
Okay, so I'm still trying to understand.
If you're a big employer in California, if you locate your jobs here, this is a benefit.
All
if
right.
you're a, if you sell into California but you locate your job somewhere else, you pay more taxes.
Now, you also made an argument that because there's an option, it gives companies an incentive to open a factory, for example, in another state. Can you give us a clear-cut example of where and when that's happened?
Genentech, there was an article in the San Jose Mercury where Genentech was cited as having located a plant in Oregon. They didn't want to. Their engineers, their scientists were in California. They preferred not to. But they talked about this crazy California law that actually is a disincentive to locating jobs here, and so it was better for them to put those jobs in Oregon.
And so, Lou, what about that?
Well, we have to, again, separate the issues. The point that he's making on keeping jobs in California is very important. Our tax policy should encourage that. Unfortunately, high taxes have driven many, many companies. Look at Comcast closing, Campbell's soup plant closing, all kinds of the waste management group left for Texas, et cetera. There are so many problems in California in terms of high taxes, regulation, et cetera, and we should try to cure that. But this is not the way to do it, through an initiative that then allocates the funds for the favorite projects of the progenitor of that. This is ballot box budgeting at its worst. And so let's separate the issues. If we need to have reform of certain of our corporate tax laws to keep jobs here in California, I'm for it. But let's not use the initiative process or abuse the initiative process in the way that Prop 39 does.
And Lou, would you support this law if the legislature determined how the money was used?
I would be much more inclined to do so. And usually those decisions that are made after really tough debate in the legislature about sound tax and public policy are usually decent results. And that's the way we should try and manage the state.
And again, that is Lou Euler. He's with No on Prop 39, saying he opposes this because Prop 39 would raise $1 billion a year. Half of the revenue would go toward energy projects. Half would go toward the state general fund budget. And Joe Caves with Yes on 39, we just got an email from Steven in San Rafael. And he says, I support the change to the tax law, but I feel the proponents may have overreached by restricting how the money is to be used. Voters all have their own priorities as to what needs more funding. My own priority, he writes, is higher education. So by restricting the use of the money, they might be alienating some prospective voters. What's your comment on Stephen's email?
On Stephen's email, let me say this. This is going to put at least $550 million more into the general fund, that some of which will go to higher education, that is going to be there now. And after 5 years, it's going to put more than $1.1 billion into the general fund for those purposes. So with this initiative, we're better off across the board, and all of those priorities are addressed. As to Mr. Euler's point, the legislature has tried to close this loophole three times, and corporate lobbyists in each case have been able to stop it. I don't believe that Mr. Euler ever supported any of those attempts by the legislature to close this loophole, even though we have numerous analyses by the legislative analysts and others that have identified that this is just one of those tax provisions that does keep jobs out of California.
And you're talking about Assembly Bill 1500?
That's the last.
Lou, where do you stand on AB 1500?
Well, the specific legislation, we have generally opposed anything that would increase taxes. But again, let me say, this method of changing tax law through the initiative process, where the proponent gets to allocate $500 million a year to his own pet projects, is just not the way to use the initiative process. Irrespective of the tax policy issues before the legislature, this is an abuse of the initiative process, in our judgment.
And we have a comment for you, Lou, from a listener who says, Mr. Euler claims that this is all driven by one person, but hasn't the policy in Prop 39 been supported by Democratic and Republican legislators three times, only to be blocked by special interests?
Well, that's on the tax policy issue. And again, we should leave that within the legislative environment, or if it is important enough to change through the initiative process, then let's leave the proceeds that are provided by that change in the general fund to be allocated according to legislative priorities rather than the priorities of the progenitor of the initiative, Mr. Steyer.
And thank you for those emails. And I'd like to take a few phone calls. Let's hear from Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hi there. I have a comment slash question that for either guest to respond to. I was under the impression from that many studies have been done that indicate that businesses do not relocate due to regulatory changes or tax changes. They largely relocate due to what the increased sales would be. So I would project that it's the economy that's making the businesses have problems. It's not the increased regulations or the fear of increased tax burden.
Oh, thank you, Ruth Ann. What about that, Lou?
Well, if you look at the studies that have been done consistently by all kinds of management magazines and by the Business Roundtable in California, the California Manufacturers and Technology, they all zero in on taxes and tax rates, over-regulation, and the attitude of the regulatory bodies, the Environmental Protection Agency, and land use rules and regulations, and the attitude of those people that are attributable to the terrible flight of businesses and jobs from California. That's been uniform over the last 20 years.
And how would you respond to that, Joe?
Well, I think it's a good point that there's no question it's the overall economy that drives where jobs locate. California is a very attractive state in many regards. You cited a bunch of companies that locate here because of the assets we have here. The most important thing is for us not to create a tax situation that provides an incentive to locate somewhere else. And that's one of the things this measure tries to fix.
All right. Thank you for the call, Ruth Ann. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Today, we continue our election coverage with a debate about Proposition 39, which would require multi-state businesses to pay taxes based solely on their amount of sales in the state. As it stands today, they can either choose to pay taxes based on sales or based on payroll, property, and sales. If Prop 39 passes, the legislative analyst says the state will collect about $1 billion in revenues each year. Half of the revenues would go toward alternative energy projects. The other half would go to the state general fund budget. Tom Steyer, founder of Farallon Capital Management, is funding Prop 39. He's contributed $22 million. Other financial contributors, much smaller contributors, include Californians for Clean Energy, the National Resources Defense Council, League of Conservation Voters. The California Labor Federation also has endorsed Prop 39. Joe Caves is with Yes on 39. He's an attorney and registered lobbyist in the state specializing in environmental issues. And then on the no side, they say it's a massive tax hike. It'll cost jobs. You've got corporations opposing Prop 39. And we're joined by Lou Euler, founder and president of the National Tax Limitation Committee and one of the main opponents of Prop 39. And what do you know? We now have full lines on Prop 39. And you can join us in just a couple of minutes. We'll have one open at 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment, yourcallradio.org, or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from John in Palo Alto. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hello. It's commonly phrased at the KALW radio station to raise taxes or collect taxes from corporations. As far as I understand it, ultimately, those taxes are paid for by the people who buy taxes who use the services, buy the products of the corporations, that corporations are just really tax collectors for the government. They have to eventually pass those additional costs on to the end user of their product or services. So why does KALW obfuscate the fact that these taxes are really on individuals who have to work to pay the extra money for whatever they're buying from the corporation?
I'm not sure I'm understanding you correctly. You're talking about what our guests are saying about these taxes?
No, what I'm referring to is the caller who said that corporations should pay their fair share.
Right.
I'm referring to KALW over the months where they say they should, you and others have suggested raising taxes on corporations. That's generally favored on your call, your show. And I'm suggesting that corporations really don't pay the taxes. It's the individuals who buy the products and services that end up paying those taxes.
All right. Well, we're not advocating anything. We're merely having a debate about what Prop 39 would do.
Let me intervene if I might.
Let me respond because I think it was more focused towards me.
Go ahead, Joe, and then I'll get Lou to respond.
I just want to compliment him on his knowledge of economics, and that is exactly right. Corporations don't pay taxes. They are a tax collector, and to the extent that the resources available to the corporation are reduced, then shareholders suffer, employees suffer, and the care of the customer is not as great as when the corporate entity has more resources. So he is precisely right, and I compliment him for his understanding of economics.
And Joe, how would you respond?
Let me just say corporations do pay taxes, and if they didn't, they wouldn't oppose changes in tax law. The key issue for us here is, are they paying fair taxes? Have we structured a system where in-state companies and out-of-state companies are operating by the same rules? And that's what Prop 39 tries to do, create that level playing field.
All right. Well, let's go to our next caller, Mike in Salinas. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
The gentleman, the guest who is opposing 39, I think he makes a good point when he says that the money should not be, I think the term he used was earmarked for the progeny or the bill's pet projects. But throughout the course of the interview, he's kind of been saying the same thing. This is the reason why this bill sucks. But I'm on the same page as him with that, but I agree that this is a loophole that really does seem to create an unfair advantage for, to use rhetorical language, sending bills out of state. The gentleman that's opposing the bill doesn't really give an alternative.
Well, Mike,
I agree with him for that point.
Mike, why don't you stay on the line? And so Lou, Mike says you've got good points here, but you're not offering any clear alternatives.
I'm sorry. Would you restate that? It was very difficult
yes.
to hear the gentleman.
Mike says that you're making good points, but you're not offering any clear alternatives.
Well, an alternative is do nothing, and you're a lot better off often to do nothing. But let me say, as one reads carefully the language of this measure, one of the reasons that I have talked about the need for oversight and all the rest is one of the clear provisions is to create public-private partnerships for all kinds of green activities and green jobs. And I just see that becoming the focal point of the allocation of these resources, and that the appointees, the political appointees on this oversight board, will become directors of funds to their pet people, their pet projects, their pet areas of the state, etc. So I see the politics created by the decision-making process in this measure as being a source of additional special interest activity with no conflict of interest provision set forth at all.
And we'll get to that in a minute. Mike, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any?
I agree with the gentleman's point that the allocation of the funds is imperfect. No disagreement whatsoever. But I would say that more imperfect is the tax loophole, which this particular piece of legislation seeks to remedy. So how, in the estimation of your guest, can both of these issues be satisfied? I am of the opinion that the tax loophole is a bigger problem than the present allocation of the funds that it seeks to gain.
Am I, Lou, can you hear Mike?
I'm having great difficulty.
So how would you deal, just quickly, because we have a number of calls and I want to get to as many as we can, how would you deal with this tax loophole specifically?
One man's loophole is another guy's simple tax clearance. And so, again, I would leave this to the legislative process to refine the issue over time, and clearly this isn't the kind of thing that you put in an initiative, and especially with the allocation of $500 million a year to the special projects of the progenitor of this initiative.
And let me just respond again, Rose. The fact is, Mr. Euler has always opposed these changes in law in the legislature. The legislature's been unable to close this loophole. That's why we're at the initiative process. He's also misstated the oversight board. The oversight board in this measure has no authority over projects or spending. Their job is to do a public audit that's available every year to make sure the money is properly spent and not abused.
And can you just give us a quick overview? Who's getting really in the way of Assembly Bill 1500? Is it a partisan vote?
Oh, it's absolutely a partisan vote. And it's the tax groups, of which Mr. Euler's is one, that's opposed each of the attempts to close this loophole. And it's out-of-state corporations who would have to pay more under this, the same as they would under Proposition 39. They want a tax formula that rewards them for keeping their jobs out of state, but allows them to sell in California and pay lower California corporate income taxes than companies operating just in California.
All right, thank you. And we have an email for you, Lou, from Celine in Capitola. She says, what examples of companies getting their taxes lowered lead to increased worker pay and or lower consumer prices and job creation can you give?
Well, the best example of lower regulations, taxes, and all the rest, and the impact on corporations is the and businesses generally, is the exodus of so many businesses from California to other states with lower taxes and less regulation. And so the march out of California by companies and jobs is Exhibit A of California's bad public policy and tax rule situation.
But can you give any specifics where a company got lower taxes and it resulted in job creation and lower consumer prices?
You bet. And let's just take the three that have been announced over the last week or so. Comcast is marching 1,000 jobs out of California to Oregon, Washington, and Colorado. And the initial announcement was really two things: the tax laws and the high cost of electrical energy to run the call center systems that consume a lot of electricity. California, through all the green projects, including some of the green things that are in Prop 39, have driven electrical costs, just as our gasoline prices are the highest in the nation because of formulation requirements. Our electricity costs are so high that heavy electric users, companies, have marched out of California.
And Joe, quick response there.
Energy efficiency does not raise energy prices. I think if we look at the overall situation, the problem we get is companies want to move out to avoid, to take advantage of just these kind of corporate loopholes. Other states, the states that Mr. Euler just mentioned, states like Texas and New Jersey, are states that have adopted the mandatory single sales factor because they know that brings jobs into their states. That's why we should adopt it here.
And we have just a couple minutes left. We have a few callers. We don't have time to get to them. John in San Francisco, Edmund in Seaside, says, who decided that the revenue would go to alternative energy? Edmund says he's an environmentalist, but the earmarks bother him. Joe?
Well,
and let me put it this way, the way this is structured, and it's not earmarks, it says half of the money for 5 years goes into a clean energy jobs fund for job creation in the energy efficiency and clean energy sector. The legislature will allocate the money to existing programs. Our federal stimulus money that's gone into these things is running out and will be out by next year. This will keep jobs. This will create jobs within that sector in sort of key areas in an area that's causing a major drag on California's economy.
And is there a potential...
So that's the reason that's there.
Is there a potential conflict here with Thomas Steyer, co-chairing Californians for Clean Energy and Jobs, the other major financial backer of the measure?
There's no conflict whatsoever. The Californians for Clean Energy and Jobs is the campaign committee that defeated a Proposition 23, another measure by out-of-state corporations that was trying to overturn California's environmental laws.
All right, so let me get final thoughts from both of you. Joe, why should voters vote for Proposition 39?
Proposition 39 closes a loophole that benefits only out-of-state corporations. It creates a disincentive to put jobs in California, so passing Prop 39 will bring jobs back to California, will bring money back to California. It will improve the condition of our general fund. It'll put money into schools, and it creates a program to create jobs over the next 5 years, up to 70,000 jobs a year, that can help further improve California's economy.
Thank you. And Lou, why should voters vote no on Prop 39?
Because it's a $1 billion tax increase, shifting money from the effective private sector to the ineffective public sector. Number two, it is ballot box budgeting by the person who drafted this measure, Mr. Steyer. He ought to use his own money for these special projects that he likes so well, and it takes out of the hands of the legislature the $500 million a year for 5 years that should otherwise be directed to higher priority projects than what are listed in Prop 39.
Thank you. Lou Euler is with no on Prop 39, and Joe Caves is with yes on Prop 39. Thank you both for joining us. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thank you. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How should we combat human trafficking and sexual exploitation in California? On the next Jura Call, we continue our election coverage with a debate on Proposition 35. If it passes, it would increase criminal penalties for human traffickers. Supporters say it would protect vulnerable populations from exploitation, while opponents say the language is too broad, penalties are too severe, and the wrong people would suffer. What questions do you have about Proposition 35? It's Jura Call with Holly Kernan and you.